What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, kicking off the new year much later than everyone else. Coming up, we'll catch up on who's on the up and who's on the slide in all three divisions, talk through a multitude of managerial changes, and look ahead to a couple of the weekend's key clashes. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are back for the new year and in a new time slot as well. We're going to be dropping our pods on Wednesday for the foreseeable future. It'll give us a bit more of a chance to catch up with some midweek matches and everything else that's been going on in the world of the Football League. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, and I'm joined as ever by my two stalwarts. I've got Adrian Clark alongside me. Hello, Adrian.
Hello. It feels like ages, doesn't it? We've had an extended break, haven't we? We should be fully recharged today. No excuses.
Incredible that none of us went to Dubai, particularly you, Clarky, I guess. Sam Parkin's back with us too. Sam, you went to Bournemouth, so I guess that's kind of like a seaside summery hot weather break, no?
We were in the sea. I was in the sea after a little run on, what was that? Would have been Boxing Day, I think. Lovely, yeah. Clarky's already been to Dubai this year. He's already done that. He's already ticked that box.
No money left after that. But I'm impressed with going in the sea in winter. It takes a certain amount of cojones, I think, to do that. So well done, Sam.
Very, very shriveled cojones by the time you get out. Right, here's a new little feature we're going to do at the start of the pod. It's called Opening Gambit. It's going to be based on something relatively topical from the Football League. So Carl Robinson, who we'll talk about later, got sent off 14 minutes into his debut as Salford manager. What's the earliest you've made somebody question their decision to hire you, / back you, etc.? Well, Adrian, you can kick us off.
Yeah, pretty easy for me. Rotherham United. I signed on loan for them in the winter of 1996. And yeah, they'd just been spanked by Peterborough. So they got me in on loan. And I think I and the manager were put off of each other by our first conversation before I'd even kicked a ball for Rotherham. I think he realised, and I was certainly thinking, because he said, can you play centre mid for me tomorrow night against Stockport? And I'd never played centre mid in my entire life. And of course, I said, yeah, of course, you know, like you do. But I did say, I've never played there ever. So you might have to bear with me. And look, after 45 minutes of chasing shadows in the engine room, yeah, I'm sure that he was having big regrets because he didn't need a winger. He needed a central midfielder. And whoever had recruited me, the chief scout, had probably dropped a ball there. So yeah, we lost 1-0 to Stockport. I didn't really do much in the 90 minutes. I was on the bench for Notts County, came on. It was a goalless draw, did all right. And I was an unused sub against Plymouth next time out. And I think after 18 days spent on loan at Rotherham United, I just called it quits. I just said, look, you don't want me. I don't want this. I'm going home for Christmas. See you later. So there you go.
It was very much not Miller time then. Sam, I'm sure you've had to scratch your head and think back to your dark and distant past to come up with an answer to this.
I've only just looked at the running order, so I'm thinking on the spot here. I mean, where to start, literally. I always started horrendously at clubs in terms of training. I always had good debuts. I was always one that could be highly motivated, obviously, when you're in front of a new set of supporters. So that wasn't a problem. I'll go for two just quickly. Ipswich, I have to say, because I didn't score in the pre-season. I mean, I trained quite well for the lads that are in the squad. But as soon as the punters were there, I didn't score. And it was so bad that I think me and Nicky Forster, the other big signing that summer, I think we were mocked up as dumb and dumber in one of the local papers or the national papers. Because harshly, we'd gone in to replace Darren Benton, Chef Kikuchi, who had fired them to the playoffs the previous season. So we're on a bit of a hide into nothing. So that one, definitely, I still think about. And probably Exeter, and I've told the story before, heat stroke, pre-season, too much time on the beach at Exmouth. And I remember going in to see Paul Tisdale, and he suggested it was the changing climate those 3 hours down from London, and it was possibly hay fever, which I've never been diagnosed with before or after. But he gave me a little excuse there, but I missed the pre-season game against QPR because I was feeling a little bit poorly. So they were thinking this 6'2" aggressive centre forward is maybe not exactly what we require.
Well, that makes me feel better. Mine's pretty minor in comparison. My first full-time job in this industry was for a company then known as Premium TV. You'll know them now as DAZN. And on my second day, my boss gave me a big stack of Excel spreadsheets and said, if you could just work your way through those, that'd be great. I looked puzzled at him. He said, it says on your CV, you've got advanced Excel skills. Didn't even know how to open it. Never mind, do a spreadsheet. And so he was quickly regretting his decision. Somebody who doesn't regret their decision are Quinbet to sponsor this podcast. And you won't if you open an account with them. How about this? They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, next today, we'll check in on the championship. Sorry for the copyright infringement, Sam. Because you see, Sam does a YouTube show with the excellent Benjamin Bloom called Championship Check-In. Check that out if you like. Wanted to start today, though, by taking the temperature of the top four in the championship. Much has changed since we last spoke, but one thing remains the same, namely that Leicester are walking it. So they've got 65 points. All the top four play 26 games. Leicester 65 points, Ipswich 55, Southampton 52, Leeds 48. Let's start with the leaders then, Clarkey. Can you put forth some sort of case for them not winning the league by a 10-point margin? A couple of people scratching around saying, oh, Wilfred Ndidi's going to be injured for a bit, but Cesare Cassidy seems to have stepped up in his absence anyway. They're walking away with it, right?
Yeah, I can't argue against Leicester winning the title. I did back them as well, so I kind of want them to now as well. But yeah, they've been so impressive. They're on course for 116 points. If they can replicate what they've done until this point, they will obliterate the championship record. Now, I'm pretty sure they'll fall short, but they can afford to lose one or two here and there and still get to that kind of level. It's astonishing. It's kind of not fair that they've got this squad in the championship because they are so much stronger than everybody else. Yeah, look, no Ndidi, but you can slot in any number of excellent players into that midfield. Cassidy's one of them. You know, there's no Daka at the moment, even in the actual, but Tom Cannon's come in and he's absolutely flying. You know, so you look around that pitch and they genuinely have two or three really good players for each position. So no, they're going to win the league and they're going to cruise it.
Mm. Tough-ish few games coming up. Coventry this weekend, which is a derby match for them.
That's a toughie, yeah.
Yeah. Then they've got Ipswich, Swansea, Watford. So who knows? Maybe there'll be a bit of a wobble. I think we can say, Sam, that Ipswich are having something of a wobble. You watched them claim their first win in six attempts at Wimbledon in the Cup on Saturday. We expected a blip at some point. That injury time equaliser against Leicester, just before they got pumped against Leeds, that looks vital now, doesn't it? Because otherwise they'd be on a real stinker of a run.
Yeah, they've had tough games as well. And you think back to the start of that period where I felt a point in the East Anglian derby was a good result. With hindsight, it would have been lovely to get those additional 2 points going into this run of game, which has consisted of course, Leeds and Leicester amongst them. So it's been really tricky. I think the injury to George Hirst is a big problem. I just think the way they've set up this season, the pattern of play, he is fundamental to that. To have someone who's so mobile, who can stretch teams, playing in that central role, I think has been really vital to him. As vital maybe as Chaplin, as that wonderful left-hand side with Leif Davis, the brilliance of Broadhead coming in off that left-hand side. We know the way they set up, but I think Hurst has been so pivotal. So that's big. Davis has been injured the last game or two as well. Defensively, yeah, still, they give you a little bit of a chance. Missing Burgess at the moment. Edmondson's come in and done really well from the cold. So we'll see how they respond this weekend against Sunderland. But I wouldn't say it's inevitable, but we could be in for something special here. The way that Southampton are going, you can't discount Leeds as well. But certainly Ipswich's future as a realistic proposition for the automatic positions is probably going to be defined by the window. And whether they can strengthen, particularly in that forward position.
Southampton, the most likely to supplant them at the moment, Adrian. Three points behind them in third. 19 unbeaten in all competitions. Is this kind of an indication of the power that the relegated teams have? You know, you talked about the strength of squad that Leicester have got. Southampton's isn't bad either, right? And that strength in depth maybe coming to the fore a bit?
Definitely. It's a long, hard winter, isn't it, in the Championship? And those with the deepest pockets, the biggest squads, usually prevail. In fairness to Ipswich, they've acted quickly, haven't they? They got Sarmiento in on loan from Brighton. Obviously, he was at West Brom and impressed me when I saw him. Lewis Travis is coming as well from Blackburn. So, yeah, I expect Southampton to respond as well and dip into the market. I spoke to McKenna after the Stoke draw and he was very chilled. Like, he's not worried. He just said, look, it's all the pressure's on Southampton and Leeds. Like, we're just enjoying the season. And I think if that rubs off on the players, that might relax them as they go in the run-in. There is pressure on Southampton. And I think that most people now almost assume they're going to usurp Ipswich and take that second spot. But they've got to earn it, haven't they? So they've got some big games coming up. They've got a settled side now. They will control the vast majority of matches. And providing, you know, Adam Armstrong stays fit, Edozie as well, who's come to the fore, they probably should. Eclipse Ipswich and come second. What I will say is that they've still got to go to Leicester, they've got to go to Ipswich, they've got to go to Leeds, and they've got to go to West Bromwich Albion as well. I think their season and their prospects might be defined by those four games.
What about Leeds then, Sam? They're in fourth. I wondered if Patrick Bamford actually scored the best goal ever in the FA Cup this weekend. I'm prone to recency bias, but it's got the skill to go with the style, that one. And I know that he scored in back-to-back games for the first time in a year. Interesting festive period for them, wasn't it? They've won back-to-back games 3-0 now, then Wayne Rooney's Birmingham arriving at the ideal time. But they had lost at Preston and West Brom. Have you got them pegged as automatic possibles, probables, or playoff bound?
Possibles. I would say at this stage, you can't discount them. They just need to improve in those away games. They've got the firepower, the ammunition to be able to get back into games where they go behind, but it's six times, I think, five times by the odd goal they've lost away from home and still unbeaten at Elland Road. So it's clear where they need to improve. And yeah, having Bamford back in form, scoring goals, perfect timing really to give Piro Ruta a little bit of a rest. And he can obviously come in for certain games, a little bit of rotation there. No, I think they're a really good 11, Leeds, and I think they can counter attack and hurt teams, and they can also dominate games by out possessing teams. So no, I think absolutely they're still in the conversation, but yeah, they need to improve away from home, and I'm sure they will do in the second half of the season.
All right, well, that's the top four in the Championship. We're going to talk about some more tier two sides next. We're looking at the teams who did well and not so well over the festive feast of football. Let's start with you, Adrian, and Millwall. That thumping win at Sheffield Wednesday kicked off Joe Edwards' reign. Then it went to four defeats in five. Now he's turned it round again. Three straight wins in the league. How's he managed that?
Yeah, I'm really chuffed for him because obviously he was under pressure right from the get-go, wasn't he? So yeah, to turn it around will be a huge relief for him. Great Christmas. How's he done it? Well, he's just learning, isn't he, about his players, about the best shape for them. They sort of evolved from a 4-4-2 that was more or less the regular system before he arrived to more of a back three. I think 3-4-2-1 is the current shape. And I think he's looking at Norton Cuffey and thinking he's definitely more of a wing back than a full back. See Wallace on the other side or Brian, you probably put them in a similar boat. He's stocked with some pretty good centre half. So it kind of makes sense to go down that route. They're playing a bit more football, certainly a bit more comfortable in possession. They're not having that much possession, which I think is interesting. I think a lot of people thought Millwall would suddenly become ball hogs, but they haven't really. And I think that's sensible, that they're not trying to run before they can walk. They don't have, you know, maybe enough players that are used to playing that way. So he's making them more comfortable on receiving the ball in tight areas, and generally they're playing some quite nice stuff, but it still tends to be on the counter. He's changed the goalie as well, which is a big call, isn't it? Bjarkovsky's out and Sarkic is in. So yeah, I just think there's a little bit more variety but about the way that they can score goals, about the way they attack than they used to, maybe less reliance on set pieces. And of late, they've also been really solid in terms of the organisation. He's got them well drilled. Quite a few clean sheets lately for Millwall. So yeah, I think you've got to say that he's doing a very good job. until this point, Joe Edwards. And yeah, I hope it continues.
He's got Middlesbrough coming to the Den on Saturday. Now, Sam, I doubted whether Mark Robins could get Coventry going again after they had another poor start to the season. Obviously, I'm an idiot. How's he done that? And how much of it is down to the form of Tatsuhiro Sakamoto, who's been banging him in of late?
Yeah, he's been brilliant. And I was really fortunate to see him, I think it was the first week of the season, at AFC Wimbledon in the League Cup. Him and Hadji Wright were really impressive on that night, so much so that I think I talked them both up, and they haven't really delivered until recently. So, no, I'm really pleased that he's come to the fore. He's a bit like Mahrez, a bit like Houlihan, all left foot, you know, between the lines, probably a little bit more dynamic than Houlihan. But yeah, he's been incredible, and it's coincided with a change in shape. We know that Mark Robins has really been at the forefront, I think, in terms of tactical setups in the Championship over their period in the second tier. So he's kind of gone, I think it's 4-4-1-1 with Callum O'Hare playing centrally, right on one side, Sakamoto on the other, and it's really benefited them. And I think, you know, aside from obviously Mills, the definite improvement, and Southampton's run, I think Coventry have probably been the big winners of the Christmas period, and the ones that everyone's starting to take notice of, partly due to the current form, partly due to the way that they've improved throughout the season. The new players have had an opportunity to bed in, and because of what they did last year, coming from deep to get into the playoffs. So, yeah, going into a game against Leicester, where Clarkie will know better than me, but I believe there's, because he lives in that neck of the woods, there's no love lost. I fancy them on the back of, I think, a 6-7 game unbeaten run to get something against the league leaders.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. It's the M69 derby. Is that you should never have a derby around a road, should you? But I live pretty much equidistant from both. I'm probably slightly closer to Coventry, but there'll be a massive following from Leicester going there. Yeah, well, all those clean sheets for Cov as well, especially at home. I think they've had seven clean sheets on their own patch. That's got to give them confidence coming into the game. So, yeah, they've got a chance.
I mean, Casey Palmer doing Casey Palmer things, as they say, with that goal that he got in the FA Cup at the weekend. So that's the good. Let's have a look at some of the not so good, though. Queen's Park Rangers. Adrian, for personal reasons, we've given this to you rather than Sam, bit too triggering for him to continue talking about. It's a classic case of look away from the Championship table for 5 minutes, and that team you thought were doing okay are actually not doing okay. No wins in six, only scored twice in their last five league games, even looked like they were about to reverse their FA Cup curse last weekend, but that didn't happen either. Where's it gone wrong?
Yeah,
Clarky, tell me why I should go to the game on Sunday. Tell me why.
I don't know. Who's the game against on Sunday?
Watford, 12 p.m. kickoff.
Oh, that's it. Yeah,
2 degrees.
It's going to be so cold. It's going to be so cold. But Watford aren't exactly pulling up trees, so maybe got a chance, but. I mean, it's 5 minutes ago. That wasn't he like one of the most successful QPR managers at the outset of his career? I mean, just remarkable. I think the big problem has been losing to immediate rivals. Like they've played quite well against Ipswich, against Hull, against some of the better teams. They've put up some decent performances. Southampton, they didn't get blown away. But against their immediate rivals, where maybe they're expected to go and create and to make things happen, that's where they've really struggled. I've looked at some of the numbers. So the big games they lost against Sheffield Wednesday, Millwall and Cardiff, you know, teams around them, they had, across those games, 11 unblocked shots. You know, you should be racking up, you know, more than 11 a game, especially against teams that are supposedly of your level. So creativity's been an issue, still a massive reliance on Chair and Willock, who have been very hit or miss. I think they've either scored or assisted the bulk of QPR goals since Cifuentes came in. And if they're not at it, then who's going to step up? That's the question. There's also been a massive rotation policy. I mean, you'll know this, Sam. I know you've got to rotate around Christmas time, but, you know, he's sort of not really settled on a team at all, is he? So, yeah, there's work to be done. And, of course, it doesn't help when your keeper's out of form. And I think Begovic, I mean, you see some of the goals they conceded. He just looks very like a bag of nerves, really coming out for crosses. So, yeah, I'm not saying he should drop Begovic, but he needs his keeper to be a lot better than he's been in recent weeks.
So Begovic has turned into Popadon Mitz, and QPR have slid to second bottom in the table.
Popadon Mitz. I mean, a while since I've heard that.
Might well
be. We used to call it Popadon wrists. We used to call it though, Sam, didn't we? Or chocolate wrists. You know, when a keeper gets their hands on it and it still goes in.
Either or.
Yeah.
But you called it mitts. I know.
You know what? So. You know what? I heard wrists as well, and I thought I think mitts is better because that if you had poppadoms for hands and a ball hit them, they would crack and the ball would go through. I don't see a hand looks much more spherical and like a poppadom than a wrist does. So yeah, I mean
we could do a whole podcast on goalkeeping shouts, couldn't we? I used to enjoy. Can we have some hands in those gloves? I used to enjoy.
I cruelly dubbed one of our goalies the Polo Mint. Once as well. This is a disgrace, but you know, everything went through.
Anyway, good luck, Asmir. He's played for AC Milan. Blackburn, Sam, they're 17th in the table. What's all this about? Is it their young squad? Is it those Yondell Thomason links with Stoke? What's going on there?
You've set me up beautifully here because I think they've got a really out of form goalkeeper just to kick off. They could do some hands in his gloves. Leopold Wolstedt, and I don't think they've got much in reserve there either. So you could actually question so many of the goals in the last few games, and they conceded two against Cambridge at the weekend in the Cup. Neither of those were his fault, by the way, but I think that's really problematic. Obviously, defensively, I think only Rotherham have conceded more in the division, and you know, over the last 12 games, I think it's 25 conceded, so they're averaging two goals a game in their own net. And yeah, it's a really poor run. So I think defensively, clearly an over reliance on Sammy Smodic. I think 16 goals and three assists. Their next top goal scorer, Sigurdsson, I think has got five. So where would they be without him? Well, yeah, I think Yondell Thomason probably would have wanted a bit more room for manoeuvre in the transfer market. Probably the opportunity to get in a better calibre striker to replace Brereton Diaz. Ennis and Telilovic are the two that have come in. I think they're still looking for their first league goal between them. So thank goodness that Sammy Smodic has been having this unbelievable season. But the next run of games aren't too bad. So I think they'll be fine. I don't think they have to be looking over their shoulder, but I think it's probably a tight budget, some signings that haven't worked particularly well, and they're far too open. They're still going to be a team that we enjoy watching. They play really nice stuff going the other way, but yeah, defensively, miles off it at the moment. And it's been an awful drop-off, and an awful drop-off away from home. Not so long ago, they'd won four on the spin. They're really poor on the road. Four losses on the bounce away from home and conceded 13 goals. So that's where their problems lie, defensively and on their travels.
Well done for coming up with a synonym for spin so quickly there. Bounce, probably the next best one, and you got there without so much as a
pause. No problem.
Let's keep it positive. We'll talk about some goods from League One and League Two. Bolton, Adrian, only 2 points behind Portsmouth, and they've got two games in hand. Really good bounce back ability, right, from the Trotters after they lost that big one at Pompey, didn't they, and their next game. But four wins on the spin since then, and they held Luton to a goalless draw in the Cup as well.
Yeah, kind of a perfect Christmas for them. Haven't been conceding goals either. Obviously, the goalless draw at Luton, really impressive. And before that, three clean sheet wins. So, yeah, they're super solid. When I watched them before, what I really liked about them was as soon as they lose the ball, they want to get it back quick. You know, they work really, really hard. And they've got such a robust shape about them, Bolton. I know that Sam saw them and they had a real off day against Pompey, but they got this 3-1-4-2 shape, and it doesn't deviate. That's pretty much it most weeks, and everyone knows their jobs inside out. They've also got a top goalie in Nathan Baxter. I think that was a huge decision in terms of who comes in for James Trafford, the star loanee from last year, and I think they chose wisely. I've seen Baxter quite a lot in recent years, and he's always done all right on various loan spells. So
he really built up his career nicely, because Sam and I saw him at Chelsea for a long time, but I remember his first loan was at Met Police, and he went all the way through the steps from there, playing Scotland Scotland for a bit, doesn't he? He's done League Two, League One. You feel like he's going to be a steady keeper for years and years because he's still young, especially for a goalie.
Think about like Nick Pope's trajectory. You know, Nick Pope was playing non-league football. You know, he was playing really down the leagues. It wasn't until his mid-20s that he sort of really made that progression. So yeah, he could do it. And I think that the manager there, Ian Everett, has said that Baxter can go to the top. They have faced the fewest shots in open play in League One, Bolton, which doesn't a half help. You know, you're controlling matches, you're keeping teams at arm's length. They've faced 70 fewer shots in open play than Pompey, which I think is quite remarkable, really. Obviously, they've played a couple of games less, but they're still decent. And obviously, up front, they've got, you know, good players in Charles and Adebayo and Bob Varson can come in. So yeah, look, they're a decent team. I fancied them at the outset, I think they will be top two come the end of the season. I just don't see too many faults in the team. Competition for places in every department too.
Home to Cheltenham on Saturday. They are Derby, Sam. It pains me, but I do really like Paul Warne. Knocked out of the Football League trophy at home to Bradford of League Two in the week. Probably the competition they can do without. But Warne said, "I can't pretend it's a good thing. It's bad news. We played poorly. People paid good money and sat there freezing to watch that. And I apologise." Always like his honesty. Very quotable. And has he got them turned around? The exception being that late loss to Peterborough at home over Christmas. Mm. But other than that, it looks as though he's getting a tune out of them on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, they're looking good. I saw a bit of that game, actually. That was great fun. Two teams going at it. I think, you know, you always get that with Posh, and I think Derby are turning into that now. I think they look strong. It probably takes a while to get up to speed in terms of the intensity that Paul Warne wants to play with. I think they've been a back four most recently, but went to the back three, which he's obviously favoured previously in his career for that win at Fleetwood. I think it's right to probably draw attention to James Collins, the improvement in his performances. I think the last time we spoke about Derby, we spoke about Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, his consistency this season. He's still, you know, producing, scoring goals, scored the opener in the most recent game. Most set piece goals, most goals from substitutes in the division. I think the traits that we would have anticipated Paul Warne getting out of his side is coming to roost now. So no, they're going really well. I think it was always going to be the most open division of the three. And I think, despite what we've already said about the Championship, I don't think you can discount probably Stevenage, Barnsley. They were 8 points back. Blackpool, I think, are a really good side. They've shown that in the Cup. They showed that when they thumped Pompey at Fratton Park. They are away back, I think, 12 points off automatic at the moment. But yeah, I think it's got the Bolton, Portsmouth, Peterborough derby has got the ingredients to be a really good battle, I think. And yeah, Derby, there's not loads you can pinpoint, but 28 points from the last 12 matches, 1-9 out of 12, tells you that they're in real good rhythm at the moment and have fully got to grips with 4-1 setup.
Sam mentions Nathaniel Mendes-Lang there. He's just signed a new contract. I'm going to do a small quiz at the end of the pod. Adrian, here's a little warm-up for you.
Oh, okay.
Who does Nathaniel Mendes-Lang play as international football for? Oh, I'm just learning this.
Yeah, that's I genuinely don't know.
If you get it, I'll give you the money myself.
I'm going to say Antigua.
It's not a bad guess, but it's not right. Sam's got that smirk on his face, which suggests he knows, or it's turned into a frown.
No, I've no idea, and it's got the full potential for me to say something like in the wrong continent here, hasn't it? Jamaica.
No. Listener, you got it, didn't you? Guatemala. He's got 8 caps for Guatemala. I think we'd have been here for a long time if I made you keep guessing that. So let's move on instead to League Two. Adrian, MK Dons. They're going to play the other team who we'll talk about in League Two this weekend. Mike Williamson looks like a mighty shrewd appointment, doesn't he?
He does. And do you know what? I hadn't really followed too much of MK Dons of late. I've only just realised, you know, it's the Mike Williamson that played for Newcastle, you know, not so long ago. You know, he still looks like he can play, good centre-half, wasn't he? And great record at Gateshead. Obviously, he was known for his passing football there, lots of possession. And he's brought that back. Obviously, that was the way that the MK Dons wanted to play a couple of years ago. Liam Manning sort of refined it a little bit. Sort of was possession with a purpose. And then under sort of Mark Jackson and Alexander, they sort of went back a little bit on it, didn't they? And they played slightly stodgier football, you know, a bit more functional. I think that Williamson has brought back a little bit of that attacking flair and panache and the confidence to express themselves on the ball. He's got inverted wing backs. I think, yeah, Joe Tomlinson in particular has done a good job off the left, just tucking in when need be. And we know that they've got lots of good strikers there. I mean, they've got tons of them at MK Dons this season. And it's good to see Max Dean, who's only 19, stepping up to be their leading marksman, only on eight. Well, he's got eight goals this season, which is a good return. He was one that Jackson had brought, I think, from Leeds with him. So with Dan Kemp coming back from an unbelievable loan spell at Swindon and this momentum and this newfound confidence in possession, MK Dons are looking pretty sweet, aren't they? Yeah, I mean, you look at the points tally, 23 points from a possible 33 under Williamson, 7 wins from 11, that equates to that. That's, you know, that's automatic promotion form. So keep it up, and MK Dons are absolutely nailed on to be in the playoffs.
Currently outside of it on goal difference behind AFC Wimbledon. Sam, walking's brilliant. Winning football matches is even better, right? Mm-hmm. Do we owe Nigel Adkins an apology? We sort of mocked him lightly throughout the season, but they'd won 4 in a row before a narrow defeat at Barrow.
I sat next to him at Craven Cottage early part of the season, and he didn't tell me that he was about to get a gig or that he was interested in going back in. But
bet he walked home.
Did he chat to you? And was he mega positive?
He was all right. Yeah, he was all right. Yeah, we chatted quite a bit actually, just before we went live. So yeah, we had a little natter. I think he was familiar with our work, Clarkie. So yeah, hopefully I haven't been too horrible about him. No, he wasn't. He's definitely not a listener. Well, thank goodness he's gone in there, because I think they won one of their first 7 games. So he's taken 30 points from 19 games. So he's done a brilliant job at home. They're incredible. Didn't really realise, it's kind of crept up on me, but 9 home games under Adkins, 7 wins, 1 draw. 1 defeat. So absolutely brilliant at Prenton Park. The away record, in contrast, is horrible. So, you know, they'll be looking to improve that if they're going to, you know, make some incredible dart for the playoffs. But yeah, it looks like a 4-4-2 invariably that he's played. And some of the senior statesmen, I would suggest, have done the business for him. Jennings has obviously accrued, I think, him and the other lad I wanted to talk about, Kieran Morris, you know, well over 100, 150, 200 games possibly for the club. Jennings over 2 spells, but he's 7 goal involvements in the last 8. And Morris, 5 goal involvements in that time. And a really good loan signing in Rob Apter from Blackpool, who, unfortunately, he's been creative, scoring goals himself. I think he's got 5. He's back at Blackpool now, and Neil Critchley saying that he's going to have a little look at him over the last couple of weeks and see whether he's going to send him out again, probably on loan at the end of January. So it's probably doubtful that he's going to rejoin a League Two club. And that creativity was sorely missed at Barrow, where they try to shut the game down to a degree and probably get away with a point. And they scored a beauty late on. Barrow Hawks came on for Tranmere and hit the post, a possible starter who came off the bench and influenced the game. So they didn't get the point maybe the performance yielded at Barrow. But no, this has been an incredible turnaround. He deserves enormous credit for stabilising the situation at the club. And yeah, it's probably going to be a season of consolidation. But yeah, with Nigel Adkins at that level, you'd anticipate them going close next year if he's still at the helm.
All right, well, some positive managerial chat there. We're going to talk about some new faces in different dugouts next. Loads and loads of managerial movements since we last met. We normally get a few a week, so when you have a couple off, they really start to stack up. We'll go one each here, and I'll start with you, Sam, because you know a bit about Luke Williams. Replaced Mike Duff at Swansea. Looks like a really good appointment based on his Notts work. Maybe a danger of a Rooney-style too radical transformation. He said, people will probably feel a bit uncomfortable with certain things because I'll have to get used to something new. I'm sure me and the staff will feel uncomfortable as well because we'll need to convince the players. Is he just trying to buy himself a bit of time? I mean, this one looks a match made in heaven, doesn't it? He's got previous with Swansea as well.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with you. I think there's enough of the squad there who remain from, you know, Russell Martin's time in charge. You know, I think about some of the talented footballers that they've got in the most important positions to play the type of football he'll desire. You know, Harry Darling, Bashir Humphreys, Matt Grimes, for one. I mean, he would have loved that appointment, Matt Grimes, I'm sure, when news filtered through that they were going to go for Luke Williams. So, and I've looked at the attacking players throughout the season and just felt there's all these diminutive little guys who are good taking the ball in pockets, the likes of Patino, Jamal Lowe. They've got some really good footballers. So I don't see it being problematic at all. I think it's perfect. I think his stock was so high, it was probably inevitable that he was going to get an opportunity quickly. There's been loads doing the rounds, hasn't there, over the last 6 months of, you know, just what a good fella he is, really, off the pitch, but also his kind of his tactical knowledge has really come to the fore during this spell at Notts County. So I never understood the Michael Duff appointment. I hope Michael Duff, and I believe Michael Duff, will get another job and be really successful again somewhere else. No question about that. But why the hierarchy at Swansea felt that that was the right appointment at the time, I have no idea. But yeah, Luke Williams, absolutely, on the face of it, looks like a great fit.
Why the hierarchy thought that was a good appointment at the time, I've no idea. Leads us nicely on to the end of Wayne Rooney's time at Birmingham, Adrian. He's been replaced by Tony Mowbray. Rooney's got his qualities, obviously. We saw that at Derby, and he might go on to have a long and successful managerial career. But is this a cut and dried case of a big upgrade? You know, you've got proven championship quality now in Mowbray.
Yeah, it's just a colossal upgrade for Birmingham City. In my opinion, I think that obviously Rooney was the sexy signing, but the substance isn't there yet, you know, in terms of his managerial acumen, his decision making. And I think with Wayne, he just tried to do too much too soon in terms of overhauling the style of play. And it exposed a back line that just wasn't ready to be exposed to front foot football, you know, where they're pressing high up the pitch. And yeah, they had a lot of problems. Mowbray's great. I've always been a huge fan of his. Players seem to really like him. I know that he's you know, he's not young, but players can relate to him. He's you know, very popular, good organizer, and the football, and he's excellent with young players. You know, look what he did with Jack Clark. Just one example. Loads of players at Sunderland, youngsters, have been given the opportunities and they've improved under him. You could say the same about his time at Blackburn as well. So, yeah, I think that he's got some good tools to work with at Birmingham, some really talented players. And, yeah, I think they're going to be aggressive, front foot, and they're going to take the fight to teams, but never at the expense of being organised without the ball, because he's no fool, Tony Mowbray. He'll know that the weak link is at the back. And, yeah, that'll be the place he starts. So, yeah, great appointment.
Now let's roll down the leagues then. Troy Deeney's got his first managerial gig. It's at Forest Green Rovers. Sam, this sort of felt a bit inevitable when he joined them in a coaching capacity. It's a weird volt fast from Dale Vince, though, isn't it? This sudden love of appointing burly strikers. He'll be rocking up to the ground with a Big Mac in his hand next.
Yeah, I've not had an opportunity to like dig loads into this, but you know my feeling on the last 12 months at Forest Green Rovers.
The car crash began really with Ferguson.
So yeah,
in his
course.
Hour
that's,
of need,
that's what
in
I'm
his
alluding
hour
to,
of
yeah.
need, he goes for another very well, another rookie, really. You know?
Yeah, I mean that's the most pertinent point, isn't it? Like in this situation, you would think it stinks of someone that's got the experience, I suppose, and racked up loads of games. So I understand that what's been served up has actually been better, and they've looked a lot more competitive, I think a bit more robust, as you would maybe anticipate, less playing out. I don't necessarily think this squad that's been put together in the last year or two is set up really to play too much football. And I think previously Forest Green Rovers have had a real good style of play, a real consistent style of play. So I think it probably needed ripping up right now when you look at the type of defenders they've got. First and foremost, players that aren't particularly comfortable, maybe Jordan Moore Taylor apart, in having too much possession. So I think Troy Deeney has recognised that, and they've been competitive in the first few games. But yeah, absolutely, it's a gamble. It's a weird time to be given an opportunity to someone who I would imagine has never taken a game before. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah, it was interesting being Troy's teammate all those years ago, but I have got a strange kind of fondness for him. So I hope it goes well because, yeah, it would be difficult, I suppose, for him to get a good gig if it goes horrifically wrong.
Yeah, and also we don't need more ex-footballers doing podcasts, so concentrate on the management, please, and leave this space to the rest of us. Similar situation, Clarkie, at Fleetwood, who've appointed Charlie Adam. Initially, when I was looking at this, I was thinking, well, that feels like a big risk, like we spoke of with Deeney, given his lack of experience and them, you know, battling relegation. But then they went for experience with Lee Johnson, and look where that got them. So maybe it is worth changing tack.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great first gig, I think, for Charlie Adam. I know that he's been working at Burnley with the younger players, and that's going to have to be the way forward, isn't it, for Fleetwood? Yeah, you've got to start somewhere in the managerial game, and yeah, look, the only way is up. The run was dreadful, wasn't it, under Lee Johnson? So I think he's got an opportunity there to make an impact. Actually, I do. I think certainly got the players. I know when he walked in, he said, "We've got a squad that should be higher up the league," and I fully agree. I mean, the strike force is impressive with Marriott and Stockley and others there. So, yeah, we don't know how Charlie Adam's going to do is the bottom line. But again, we wish him the best of luck. We've got a few Scots there, I think, from the previous manager that was Scottish. So there'll be some familiar voices and faces to him as well.
In League Two, Sam, a team who should be doing better, are Salford City, 21st in the standings. Carl Robinson, as we mentioned, sent off in his first match in charge for not giving the ball back quickly enough. Interesting, this is where he's landed, right? At the foot of the Football League, effectively, and in one of the hottest seats in it. If you don't perform, we know what will happen.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about this. I suppose someone's liable to get it right in time. I'm sure it's quite a lucrative opportunity for the level. So yeah, I'm sure had he stayed kind of unemployed, then there would have been, you know, various clubs that would have had him in the running. Certainly would have probably got an interview and got close to getting gigs at a higher level. So we'll see how he does. It's a squad littered with kind of experienced players who have done the business at a higher level. And, you know, you've got to question whether that's going to be the right way to get consistency for one and to get them up the divisions at the moment. I didn't understand, like, the squad of players when you marry that with Neil Wood, the previous manager, his history with working with younger players, improving younger players. You know, that was the way I anticipated them going. So it's just a mess, I think, still. But to see them languishing where they are is a big surprise. But Carl Robinson's a good manager. I think he's a decent tactician. He'll get them playing entertaining football. I'm not sure that's what's required exactly at Salford right now, but that will probably, you know, be decent fare for the punters. But it's interesting that everyone at the bottom of League Two has rolled the dice. I mean, it's Troy Deeney, Danny Cowley, Steve Morrison, Carl Robinson, the chap who took over at Grimsby, whose name escapes me, who we discuss on most of the podcasts. Help me out, Clarkie. David Artell. There we go.
That's it, yeah.
So
yeah.
They've all changed. So it's going to be interesting. They're also desperate to stay in a division. But yeah, Carl Robinson and Danny Cowley, you would say, are the two that have got the most experience, along with Artell and a couple of rookies in there.
Yeah, Steve Morrison left Hornchurch to take the Sutton gig, which looks a tough one with them bottom of the table. But Danny Cowley, Adrian, surprised to see him in at Colchester. He surely will have envisaged a job higher than League Two.
Yeah, he would have done, definitely. But it's just obviously getting itchy feet, wasn't it? And it's Essex, and Essex is a big pull for the Cowley family. You know, it's where they started out. It's where they're from. So to go home effectively is a lure. The issue is it's seen off a lot of managers, hasn't it? Colchester United in recent history. The chairman is not very popular there, and he sort of hired and fired quite a few. And the funds just haven't been available to various managers. So it's going to be a real test of his coaching, of his man management. But I do think that he, in the lower leagues, he is one of the best. You know, look at what he did. You know, the body of work that he produced at Lincoln was quality, wasn't it? So I think if anyone can get them upwardly mobile, I think it could be Danny Cowley alongside his brother Nicky. So yeah, I wish him the best of luck. Don't like seeing, you know, so we've lost Southend out of the EFL. I really wouldn't want to see another Essex side drop out of the 92. So I hope he gets it right.
Yeah, one win in 10. Obviously got a really good point at Swindon. I don't know if you two saw it. Clarkey, but just on what you said there, he said he's back in with his mum and dad at the moment.
I didn't say that.
It was only like a 30-second clip that I saw on Sky Sports News, but he said him and Nicky are in bunk beds. And obviously the other pundit, I can't remember who it was,
we're
cracking up, but I think it was genuine.
Surely the parents would have dispensed with the bunk beds by now. You know, they've left home long enough, haven't they? Unless it's for the grandkids.
I'm just seeing bunk beds, table with just laptops, just analysis late into the night.
If it was me and you, Sam, would you have a preference? You know, where top or bottom?
I think I'm bottom. Yeah.
Every day
up
bottom.
Against the wall and hoping you haven't got a little gap to throw things through.
I don't want to be going up top.
What a lovely image that is. Try and check that from your head, listener. We'll have a little break and come back and talk about a couple of championship games coming up this weekend. Southampton versus Sheffield Wednesday, an interesting one. We went through the fixtures and Sam basically picked two that inspired memories of the mid-90s. This is Andy Pearce for me. The Sanderson Derby, if you like. I remember them both having that as their shirt sponsor.
Okay, good shout. It's the Dave Pruttin Derby, Matt, isn't it?
This is true, yeah.
It's the Pruttin Derby.
David Hurst as well. A couple more others I'm sure we could think of.
Sean Palmer.
Yes, very good. We could do this all day, but we'll just lose listeners by the second, I think. Sheffield Wednesday, though, Adrian, they're on a Danny, aren't they? Are they going to stay up?
They might do, yeah. I think they could. I think Huddersfield are reeling-able, I would say, if that's a word. I don't think it is, but I quite like it. For me, I look at Sheffield Wednesday with the momentum. The players seem to be really enjoying their football. I mean, Sam called this really early, even when they weren't playing that well. Even when they weren't winning that many games early on, Sam said, no, they're playing better. And now they've continued that and started to put the results with the performances. They've got a lot more attacking menace. They're playing with smiles on their faces. I think that Danny Rowell is extracting far more out of these players than the previous managers. So, yeah, well done to him. And it could be an awkward game for Southampton. We know that they've got an awesome home record, but yeah, if Sheffield Wednesday start well and maybe nick a goal, this could be a real challenging test for them.
Southampton-wise, Sam, seen a few stories today linking Shea Adams with a move to the Premier League this month. They don't need to sell him, do they? You know, you look at the players who've gone out over summer, Ward-Prowse, Nathan Teller, people like that, Romeo Lavia, they've brought in enough money to be able to resist moves unless he's desperate to go. I know he nearly went, didn't he, before the summer deadline.
Well, they haven't really needed him, if truth be told. He's not really featured from the off too much, certainly when I've seen them. So it's more been Adam Armstrong down the middle or playing a false nine, which I think coincided with the start of this run, really, whether it be Ariba, I think at times Stuart Armstrong's done it to good effect. And I think it's been a big part of it, actually. So I'm not sure he's come on and actually notched recently. And I think that's a pertinent point that the squad's come to the fore last few weeks. I think Ryan Fraser's come on and got a few goals as well. And yeah, the last game I covered against Argyle, they made a triple change on about an hour and it was just a joke. You know, the players that they were bringing on that night, it strengthened them. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh, and Argyle had set up really defensively, quite different for them, but they'd kind of gone and set their stall out to get a point and Southampton just made this triple change and just blew me away a little bit. So no, if the money's there, They might cash in. They might cash in and think they've got enough. They've got obviously Ross Stewart for next season if they're still in the Championship, or best case scenario they're in the Premier League. But now they're going really well. Seven home wins on the spin. But I agree with Clarkey. I think they'll have a go Sheffield Wednesday. I think tactically it'll be really interesting to see what they do. But there's an intensity. I think there's an intelligence about the manager in terms of how he pressures the. Presses the opposition. Southampton, we know, will look to play out. So I think the youthfulness, the pace and the power that Sheffield Wednesday all of a sudden have got could be quite interesting, even on the counter-attack. So I expect it to be tight, but I probably would still side with the home side.
Quick one on Shea Adams. He almost went in August, didn't he? And I think they thought he was going to leave. So it might have been the case of, because there was a late collapse, that they said, look, If someone comes in for you in Jan, we will let you go. So, I think he's more likely to leave than stay.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. Ipswich against Sunderland is the other game that we're looking at. The Tony Mowbray derby, perhaps. This one, you can't have a derby named after somebody who's in charge.
Darren Bent, Titus Bramble derby, isn't it?
Okay, Marcus Stewart. Yeah, well, again, we could keep going with this all day.
It's quite a lot, yeah.
Adrian, explain to me why Sunderland swapped Tony Mowbray for Michael / Mick Beale.
Don't know.
Tommy Miller.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange one. It's not to say McBeal will fail. He might succeed there. But yeah, there was no need to sack Mowbray. I quite fancy Ipswich to bounce back, I've got to say, in this game. I know that they're sort of winless in a few, but home record is so strong, isn't it? And it feels like they've had a little bit of a breather and they can just go again now. Sunderland's away record's nothing to write home about. They've not scored very many goals away from home. Sunderland, you know, far more prolific at home. I was looking actually at their record against the best team, Sunderland, on the road. 4 away games, that's all. They've played against top half teams this season, Sunderland. And in those 4 away games, they've scored 1 goal. So they're going to have to be better in this game to be competitive, because I'd expect Ipswich to rack up, you know, at least a couple.
Ipswich really good at home, Sam, albeit they've drawn their last 3 in the league. So they could do with getting back to winning ways at Portman Road.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting thing, as I said earlier, will be who plays in the centre-forward position. Does he put Ladapo in there? I think Ladapo gets a lot of chances. I'm not sure he contributes loads other than kind of in the 18-yard box. And I just feel that maybe that central position, you need someone who's got a bit more mobility, who can stretch the play, who can be a real fulcrum for the side. I just think Broadhead was so impressive at AFC Wimbledon. He may go with him. He played up front for about a 5-10 minute period. Then he brought a kid on and changed the whole front line. But I think Broadhead's such a clever player. But with that, you lose a little bit of physicality. You certainly lose a little bit of height. And Clarkie mentioned Sarmiento earlier. I mean, I think the front line at one point was Sarmiento, Hutchinson, Burns. You know, they were all little diminutive players. I'm just not sure the way that they set up. He'll want to go without a little bit of height and a little bit of presence. So now that'll be really interesting. Every Ipswich home game, I think, is going to be 3-2. and I'm not going to be persuaded otherwise for this one. I think it's been a bit of a mixed bag for Sunderland under Mick Beale. I think really important, Roussin, the striker, got a very rare goal from a Sunderland striker in the last outing. So I think that's a big positive for them. I think they've been a bit hit and miss under him. Got some really good defensive players. They are capable. I think Patterson's a really good goalkeeper of keeping it tight. I think only 3 teams have had more clean sheets than Sunderland. So they've got it to go there, but just think Ipswich, you know, they're due one at home now. So I'm expecting goals and expect Ipswich maybe just to nick it.
We'll have to wait and see on that. We are nearly done for today. I'm going to finish, though, with a little mini quiz. There's only 3 questions here. It's just random EFL stuff. Might be a feature that is short-lived, but we shall see. What I'd like you to do, chaps, is raise your hand when you know the answer, and I will judge who gets the first guess. What is the capacity of Bradford City's ground, Valley Parade, a.k.a. the Northern Commercials Stadium? Sam, you go first.
Is he allowed to go on one?
Wins, obviously. No. I'll go honest.
28.5.
28,500. Adrian.
It's a decent guess. It's a very decent guess. I'm going to go for 26,500.
And it's Clark who gets the point there, because it is 25,136. This will be hand up, fastest finger first. Who is the front of shirt sponsor of Wrexham?
No idea.
Someone big.
Not something I take in. you know, adverts during commercial breaks on the telly, just switch off, go and make a tea.
Yeah, fine, but this is something different, so...
I don't know. I'm going to say Spotify.
Well, it's not a bad guess, you know. Last year it was TikTok. This year it's United Airlines.
Well, I'm not even allowed a guess there.
You were going to say that on Ryanair, weren't you?
Yeah, go for an airline, yeah.
All right, well, you need this to draw level, Sam, because it's the final question of the quiz. And if we draw level, it'll be a draw and nobody wants this. What is the name, fastest finger first here, of Leicester City's training ground?
No, he's played to Clarkie's strengths here.
No.
Played to my strengths because I go there quite a lot.
Yeah, I've heard it, but I won't get it. Go on, Sam. The worst thing is I read an article just in the last 24 hours that referred to it loads as well. I can only think Finch Farm, so I'm going to go something farm.
That's Everton.
Herd Farm.
It's not a farm. It's named after the lane it's on.
It's named after the village that it's in.
No, just
off the A46.
I've been there. It's quite a dangerous junction coming out of it to get back on the dual carriageway, but I don't know it. I'll take the one they win.
The initial is S.
Is it something Lane?
Nope. It's got an amusing nickname from Leicester supporters. Adrian, you get the win.
Seagrave
is exactly what it is. Yeah, so you can have a 2-0 victory. Do you know what Leicester supporters nicknamed it after a spate of injuries when they moved to said training ground? I'll help you out. Sea Graveyard, which I thought was
very good.
Amusing, personally. But well done, Adrian. I'm sure you'll push for this to be a permanent feature now that you're the lineal champion, or maybe you just want to retire, one or no. Who knows? That's just about going to do us for today. I'll give you a reminder, though, of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18+. Remember, always gamble responsibly. You can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, currently known as X, soon to be known as something else probably. We are at EFL What The There on TikTok and Instagram. It's at What The EFL. The best way that you can support this podcast is to tell somebody about it, or failing that, give us a nice review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. That'll help push us up the chart and allow other Football League fans to find us. We are going to be in a new Wednesday time slot from now on. It's going to give us more of a chance to access all the big stories from across the week in the Football League. So there is no need to do anything. Just subscribe to the pod and it will refresh every Wednesday. A new episode will drop for you. And that's going to do it for today, though. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your patience while we had our little break. We are back to one show a week now. Be back with you same time next week. Until then, thanks to Sam and Adrian and to you for listening. Catch you soon. Bye for now.